Hello, and on this week's Redwood Walk, we are going to be discussing the No Kings 2 protest, the federal government shutdown, and soybean farmers and cattle ranchers and the tariffs.
Good evening. You're either watching or listening to Redwood Walk. My name is Eric Kirk.
I'm Matthew Owen.
And I'm Dave Frank.
And we're going to be discussing national news of the day, and there's so much to talk about. We had to narrow it down. But we're going to start with this last weekend, the No Kings protest 2. It's actually the third round of national protests this year, but estimates have been as high as 7 million people across the country. The over 200,000 in Washington, D.C. alone. It's really made Trump angry when people point out that that's more than both of his inaugurations combined. But it's at any rate, and it has led to some very interesting politics. Trump and MAGA say they don't care about the demonstrations, but they can't stop talking about it. They can't put out a really vile video about it that poor Mike Johnson had to defend because he can't, you know, second guess Trump. He had to say, oh, it's media savvy that it had, a video of somebody in an airplane dumping crap on protesters, literally. You know, that's what's depicted. And so we had this many people right here locally in Eureka. We had about 3,000, and but major cities all over, huge demonstrations, Chicago, New York City, the Boston Commons, and that doesn't even account for all of the events in those cities. Like New York City, I think you had like 16 events, you know, and Queens, of course, the big place, Queens, you know, every borough probably had them as well. But there's a bit to talk about, but let's focus on why are these protests important? They're not going to change anything by themselves, obviously, but it's done. And why are Republicans on one hand saying, oh, who cares? And on the other side saying they're terrorists, they hate their country and doing everything they can to attack them? And what good do demonstrations actually do?
Well, what I'll say is Fox News has changed the narrative on these protests at least 3 times now. They started off with it's going to be Hamas terrorists and Antifa are going to be at these protests. And then when 7 million average Americans showed up, they freaked out and changed it. It's just a bunch of communists and socialists. That didn't work either because it's your neighbor that went there. So now they change it to it's just old grannies, a bunch of old ladies with signs. That's all who showed up. I was there at the Eureka protest, and there's people of all ages, from teenagers to seniors.
There was, yeah. Dave?
So I would just say, you know, again, 30,000 foot view, this was widely perceived as an organic, legitimate expression of free speech, despite the fact that there was a campaign from the right saying that, you know, there were threats and fear of equating protesters with treason, despite the fact that there was no evidence of violence, damage or harm from protesters. So, you know, the import, the sentiment overall, the prevailing belief on the ground is that the U.S. at the protest was that the U.S. is similar to, like, you know, Nazi Germany era, the rise of authoritarianism based on a pattern of actions that are evidence of an executive power grab, and that the checks and balances are no longer working, and that those efforts by citizens represent the participatory pushback exhibiting some degree of power where none really is existing to check Trump. And so that's a message for other citizens, allied elected political officials, and more broadly to the world. So that's the importance from the perspective of the participants, is that it's showing that something is possible. And the flip side of that is that this criticism from the right, they're saying, well, there's this broad risk of violence and property destruction, and that the organizers and funders can be traced to groups that encourage and fund the rally. So it plays into that broader narrative of their expansion of military going to deployment to blue cities and states.
And I just want to put out a complaint here. I did not get my George Soros protester check yet. Yeah, and I expect time and a half because it was a Saturday.
I mean, 7 million checks. That's got to even challenge.
I saw Fox News, and Fox News would never lie. They said, yeah, George Soros is paying the protesters.
All right. I want to also point out that, yeah, there was no, there were a few semi-violent incidents, but nothing to be in. Across the country, I believe 21 people were arrested, all but one of them counter-protesters. A woman showed up with a gun, fortunately unloaded. There were some shoving incidents, and the only instance of a No Kings protest person being arrested is there was a scuffle in one of the towns in Florida where there were two MAGA guys shoving protesters, and the woman hit one of them over the head with her cardboard sign. And all three were arrested because the police didn't see who started it. I don't think any of them are going to be charged. I think they were just arrested to calm everybody down. Other than that, there were, at least this time around, nobody got run over. And certainly no assassination happened. You know, that, of course, wasn't tied to the demonstrations, but it happened on the same day as the first No Kings. So, but, and, you know, but other than that, there were a few incidents here and there, but it was pretty clean. There were a group in Portland of about a dozen protesters who got arrested later doing civil disobedience at the ICE, but that wasn't directly connected to No Kings, and even that was pretty much nonviolent. And so
it, can we point out, Eric, that the level of violence nationwide was 7 million people, was a tiny fraction of January 6th with 30,000 people,
yeah,
who were extremely violent. Although Fox News will never show you the pictures of the West entrance and a 3-hour hand-to-hand combat that went on.
Oh, there's a lot they're doing, but definitely any Super Bowl party has had more violence and destruction than all of these put
together. Go to a Raider game.
But I would just add, Eric, real quick. I mean, I watched some coverage from various cities and different news networks and independent journalists, and you did see there were some places where soldiers or troops, agents protecting ICE facilities were blowing up tear gas canisters.
Right.
And that led to some degree of confusion. Also, you could see where there were counter protesters basically really trying to stimulate some degree of pushback from the protesters. But people seemed to be pretty well disciplined, or if they weren't personally well disciplined and they started like spitting on other people in their excitement, like, you know, frothing out. Some of their colleagues were coming in and separating it. So in fact, I think people on the ground were doing a really good job of sticking to the script.
Yeah. And they had marshals there with yellow vests on controlling the crowd, which was very important. Protest peacefully.
And they have trainings before that.
Right. People don't block the freeway this time.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty impressive in that sense. So in terms of, did it do any good? We have to think about what protests actually accomplish. Protests by themselves accomplish nothing. They don't do it, but they've got several purposes. First of all, they change the narrative. Certainly what was undermined was any sense that there is consensus behind Trump, if there was any. And people who watch Fox News, who might see some of the crowd sizes crossing their feeds, they're going to say it's AI. They're going to say Soros paid them all. They've got to do that because it does change the narrative. Secondly, it's the importance of demonstrations like this is the morale of the people involved. People, you know, a lot of times are fighting things on their own in small groups, and it's good to know, for people to know, that there are a lot of people who think, you know, maybe not exactly like them, but have a similar, you know, beef with what is happening. So those are the types of things. And thirdly, it actually brings people together that are organized. You meet people, you say, hey, we're doing that too. Maybe we should combine our efforts. You know, those are the things that they accomplish. But by themselves, it's, you know, there's got to be follow-up, and probably this very week a lot of those connections are being solidified. You bring together what a lot of people don't see is wherever the rally sites are. We didn't have it here in Eureka so much, but other places there's tables. People, you know, have tables, and so you go and see the sites, and you'll see some of the, you know, maybe less important ones like the Communist Party and stuff like that, but you'll also see people that are actually organizing lawful resistance to authoritarianism. So that's the importance of it. It's not that it changes it. You know, a lot of MAGA people were posting, he's still your president, you know, this afternoon. It's like, you know, it's not instant gratification. It's just one part of a long series of things.
And can I tell you my three favorite signs I saw from clicking through? One person had a sign, Does this ass Trump's face make my country look small? I thought that was great. The other one was clean up on aisle 47. Love that one. And then what was the other one? There was one other one I really liked. Shoot, mind blank now. I'll come back to it.
There was a lot of creativity. Dave, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you think of it, let us know. But in the meantime, actually, I was just going down that similar vein of where you were going, Eric, which is someone had made a comment that, like, you know, you read by having so many people out of work because of the shutdowns and layoffs, et cetera, you unleashed people to really express their creativity, and memes have gone, you know, viral with the different, you know, the frog and the dinosaurs and the blow up people, and people did get pretty creative. But the flip side of that, which, you know, that's like you said, or I think you were going to say, that like, people did get creative, which is a positive. They expressed themselves. But we did also see, you know, we have 330 plus million Americans, lots of opinions about what happened. And so some folks were thinking like, or expressing that this type of political speech really is not broad-based. And that, in fact, what they're trying to say is that, you know, there were trite, empty chants. This fits the template cadence of every other protest that they've ever experienced in their life. And that this isn't really appealing to younger audiences that are experiencing like angst and frustration, like what really comes from just showing up and shouting and dressing up and stuff. So there are people that are saying we need to do more. But I think that misses the point of what you had said, which is like, hey, this is a way for people to share space, reinforce commonality. One other thing, though, is that there are people that were saying like, well, what are you pro, like intellectuals, like, for example, Glenn Greenwald, the journalist formerly with The Intercept, and I forgot the name of his new enterprise, but he'd said that, you know, establishment Democrats are the ones who put this current system in place. And they are just upset about who's wielding the tyrannical power. The fight for democracy contradicts the top-down machinations of the Democratic Party to shape which candidates is favored by the donor class, and also the cover-up of President Biden's cognitive decline by the party. Basically saying, like, look, this is an anti-democratic system that both parties take advantage of. And right. If you're really...
Yeah, the equivalency, though, there of creating a massive... secret police
that's right.
force that's masked.
That's right.
That apparently, it turns out it was a code error, but it was reported initially that they were buying missiles. And it's like, but apparently that was just a code error on the part of ICE, what they were ordering. But they are ordering chemical weapons, not just pepper balls, but actual crowd control stuff. And they're not trained in it. They're not trained in crowd control.
And if you remember Portland 2020, people are going to show up with leaf blowers. Gas power leaf blowers. When they throw the tear gas, they just blow it back into law enforcement. But worked in Portland.
Right. I mean,
what do you do? Arrest me for having a leaf blower's new weapon?
Greenwald is right, but he's one of those people who loves to get into a pox on both houses kind of a thing. And there's just no
equivalent.
I mean, I know I'm going to get in trouble because people are going to say, oh, stop comparing to Hitler or whatever. But the point is the Weimar Republic was nothing to write home about. It was a bad set of government. But that just, you know, but to say, well, yeah, the Nazis are bad and the Weimar Republic people are bad too, just misses the point. It's, you know, although you can blame what happened on the Weimar Republic, arguably, but, and that's fine for that kind of a discussion, but it's just on a different scale. And Greenwald loves to take that role and the rest. And I still read his stuff. I mean, he does have interesting things to say about what's happening with Israel, what's happening in other contexts, but the equivalent, there's no equivalence at this point. This is not, you know, this is not the Bush administration. It's not the Reagan administration. We're not at that point. We are so far beyond that.
I just remembered the other sign. Hey, MAGA, fact to you, F-A-C-T.
All right. I mean.
And it was, Eric, real quick, this was the largest turnout of protests in American history. From several sources have said that. So I think we buried the lead that regardless of the criticism from whether it's the far, whether it's the right or the left, whoever's criticizing it, it's historic and important.
And over 2,700.
And most importantly, this is all about the 2026 midterm elections. If the Democrats can seize control of Congress, we will have a working Congress, which we do not have now.
Right. A couple of interesting polls have come out about that. And I don't want to get totally off the topic, but one is that there's an increase of 7% of people since last November that identify as Democrats, an increase of 1% of Republicans. Historically, that poll has correlated with big changes. When the Democrats only increased 1% in 2022 for midterm elections, before that, they lost ground. When they were up by 4% in 2018, they gained ground. This is beyond that, the big difference there. So I don't want to, you know, correlation isn't causation, you know, but it's just, that's how it is. And then there was another poll that came out that was done by, I believe, Pew or Public Interest, I forget which one, that said, that had two questions, and it's the second one they've asked in a few months, is, do you consider what the president is doing to be dictatorial overreach? I'm paraphrasing. Or do you consider him to be a great leader who's doing what he needs to make America great again? In the last poll, I think it was in July, of the same question, it was 52% saying he was a dictator to like 44% saying he's a great leader. This time it was 56% dictator and 41% great leaders. So there are the people, and I have a feeling that there are certain things that are backfiring on Trump.
I need to talk about that right now. Speaker Mike Johnson, Arizona held a special election 3 weeks ago where Adelita Grabjala, I can't pronounce
Rivala, I think it is.
Rivala, yeah.
Was elected.
I've seen her father.
Normally they're sworn in the next day. It's 3 weeks later, and Mike Johnson has no intention to swear in because she said she wants to vote with the who's a good guy, Roe and Massey, want to release the Epstein files. And the Republicans, all they did was fight for 4 years, release them, release them, release them. Now they're being told Trump's names all over them. I just want to point out, I've seen more pictures of Trump with Epstein than Trump with Melania. What does that tell you?
There's a Venn diagram there where there's some that are both, all three.
Something's going on there, and I want to know about it.
And that is a bad optic, that he's keeping her out for that purpose, because there's no other vote that breaks down that way. Right?
He comes up with a new excuse every day.
Yeah, no.
No matter what question they ask.
He's just been sued on it now. There's a lawsuit saying that he's in violation of the Constitution by not swearing her in. Yeah, I mean, and not only that, it extends the whole discussion. You know, maybe if you just let her in and then release the files, and then they say to all their followers, it's no big deal, but for how many weeks is it?
Why?
Yeah.
Pam Blondie was going to release some. Remember she said...
No, I'm talking about since the Grijalva election.
Oh, that's been 3 weeks.
3 weeks, yeah.
I mean, this is why we don't have a functioning Congress. They can't even swear in someone who won the election, which normally happens the day after.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. There's no basis for it. Dave, you want to chime in on that at all?
Not much, other than to say that this is obviously a schism issue, and can be a transformative issue if and when anything does get released. I say this because you see, like, if you follow the whatever it's called, the bro sphere or something, the manosphere,
right. They turn.
You're starting to see people come out and say, "What gives here?"
Like, right. Joe Rogan, like, saying this daily,
right?
And he's not alone. I mean, there's this. You're seeing, and they're breaking across a couple different issues too. So this base of support that he's got that has been pretty ironclad is really, we could see, you know, it's already starting to fracture, but we could see full blown revolt. I would say if he is revolting, if his behavior is determined to be revolting.
And can I use that, David, to pivot to what's happening with the farmers and cattle ranchers?
Real quickly, before we do that, I just want to point out that the Epstein issue is the one thing that has cut into MAGA support. Not hugely, but significantly. But go ahead.
And elections are won by this much.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
Listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
But I want to pivot to what you say. Trump's biggest supporters is the Midwest. the farmers and ranchers. They're going broke right now, literally going broke. They said last year we made little money or broke even. This year we're losing money because we lost our biggest trading partners, which they took decades to get in, China as one of the big trading partners, Canada. All these people are now saying to the U.S., here's a middle finger. I can go buy my soybeans from Argentina or Brazil. And these soybeans farmers go, we just lost 60% of our customers. How do we survive? And now the cattle ranchers are freaking out because Trump came out and said, I want beef prices down. So guess what instantly happened on Wall Street? In the futures market, beef prices went down. They're saying, the market sets the price, not the president of the United States. I thought we lived in a capitalist economy, economy.
As part of the deal with Argentina, he wants to import more beef from there.
I thought it was supposed to be America first, and we're supposed to buy beef from American cattle ranchers.
Right. Yeah, because he's not looking at the underlying causes. And I have to say, it's not Trump's fault that beef prices are so high any more than it was Biden's fault that egg prices were so high.
Oh, no, I saw on Fox News it was Biden's fault that egg prices were high.
I know.
You know what that means.
But
it's Trump's fault that beef prices are high.
Well, and that's the way it works. You blame the president when you're paying more money for stuff. It's not rational.
And gas prices have moved about this much since Biden left. This much. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think we can kind of like extrapolate this out now a little bit more broadly. Prices in general for food are up almost 30% in the last 5 years, originally sparked by the pandemic. Then you saw a drastic increase when Russia invaded Ukraine because Ukraine was the breadbasket for so many countries.
Right.
So in a global economy, our farmers were exporting more as prices were up. There's more opportunities for everyone. But even then, since then, a steady climb right up until last month when they unexpectedly jumped another 4%. So if you look at the U.S. Department of Agriculture data, they just released a new estimate for last month. And they really referenced 2 months, so August and September. And you know, realistically, they're indicating more price increases this year, not less, because of the crackdown on illegal immigration. Targeting the people who pick and process
labor,
our food,
to process
that adds
cattle.
That adds upward pressure on prices. And you know, there's been some pushback from the administration, basically saying anybody who asks questions or anybody who points out the flaws in the logic of tariffs and the crackdown, but it's not based on reason and economics. Import tariffs are a tax on imported goods paid by consumers. So for example, is up 20% since April. Beef is up 20% since June. And if you look at what the Agriculture Department says, they expect beef to go up even more, like up to another 10% this year. And that really hits people hard. So I'm going to give one more thing and then I'll hand over. But National Opinion Research Council, which has changed their name to NORC at the University of Chicago, I recently started subscribing to their email blasts. And they have an article: the cost of groceries has become a major source of stress for over half of Americans, less concerning to citizens and families than even rent and healthcare and student debt, all of which are really extremely burdensome. And the National Research Association said that half of all restaurants saying they're going to have to raise prices to keep up with costs. And so in order to maintain, this is from the National Restaurant Association, in order to maintain a 5% profit margin, the average restaurant says they need to increase their prices by 31%. So it's a two-pronged problem.
They
try to go to the grocery store.
If they raise it that much, they're going to lose customers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I got to ask, guys, I'm confused here. Didn't Trump campaign over and over again that he's going to bring prices down?
Yeah.
Totally.
He totally did. And egg prices did drop for a little bit.
Up substantially. I don't even want to tell you what's happened to utility costs for power. Gas costs moved.
He's going to learn the hard lesson that Biden didn't learn. Because whenever you go and you talk to people who support Trump, they say, well, look at these stats about how great it is. Look at the stock market. It's a healthy economy. And it's like, one thing we learned with Biden, and actually other presidents as well, is that no matter how much you try to convince people the economy is good, if they're paying more for food and basic necessities, the economy is not good for them.
If you're part of the 0.1% that lives off dividends and interest, the economy is great. If you're part of the other 99.9% out there, job growth is slowing down, prices are going up, it hits the middle class, and hopefully they're going to say, hey, I need to go a different direction here. This ain't working for us.
And, you know, and as Dave and I discussed a few shows ago, the Fed right now is committed to addressing the recession aspect. And so they're going to continue to lower interest rates, and that's going to aggravate inflation. You know, so without something else to do in it, you know, I mean, I don't, why doesn't Trump do it? You know, he proposes socialist things and then his followers like it. Why doesn't he propose price controls? I mean, you know, it's just, he does this all the time, but you know, the tariffs, it's interesting, because in the 1980s, the conservatives hated tariffs. I mean, Milton Friedman, you know, had Reagan's ear and said that we're better off, even if somebody is declaring a trade war against us, to not retaliate because all we're doing is closing the market, and that just hurts everybody, including us. He says, you know, retaliate other ways, but don't retaliate with tariffs. And Reagan repeated that. I mean, they believed in making the economy as free as possible. And so the question is it's happened with Trump, but I think it even started to happen before Trump, that the Republican position has evolved away from free market ideology and towards economic nationalism. And that's, you know, that is it's real weird. And I mean, it was one of those twists that had Trump, you know, arguing to the left of Hillary Clinton on some economic issues, but it's popular, but it's, you know, and it's popular with people because it makes common sense to impose tariffs, but economically speaking, it's bad news. It just, you know, the price is too high, literally.
Okay, I hear you.
Like that guy that ran for governor. Sorry,
if you get on YouTube, just type in farmers or ranchers, and these are people who overwhelmingly voted for Trump, who are telling him your tariffs are killing us, literally. Certain states are saying our state budgets, because we don't have the sales, we're not getting taxes on our product. You're killing our state budget. And these are all in the Midwest. People who are probably voted for Trump. In some cases, I'm seeing these numbers, 65-70% of the state voted for Trump, which is.
And that $40 billion going to Argentina is not going to help with that. You know, that's, I don't think they're not necessarily related. It's just that $40 billion subsidized farmers. Like, you know, there was some subsidy in the first time around. Farmers did get in this kind of trouble before, and Trump had a Congress that was willing to cooperate and provide some subsidies, but they're not doing that. They're slashing everything, so they don't have any money to spend. You know, they pulled out some old R&D money to pay the military a couple of weeks ago. They don't have that coming up. You know, there's only so much money they can pull out of their hat.
And I want to say one other thing. It just came out this week. The average cost of a new car in the United States is now over $1,000.
Yeah.
Growing up, that used to be the price of a house.
Yep.
Now it buys you an average car.
And I just say, because I follow the car market pretty closely, very recently, it was like 35, 38. Then it went to 43, 45, 48. So it's been moving up pretty quickly, too, for lots of reasons. But it's you know, it's just one more, you know, straw on the camel. Homeowners have to really stretch every dollar that they can. You know, I wish I had the statistic in front of me, but it's something like the top 10% of all income earners represent 50% of all retail sales. Retail sales are a very significant part of our overall economy. So we really have the fact that we have such an inequality we're experiencing. People that do have disposable income are really, you know, if 10% of the people are on the day-to-day spending the same amount of money as the bottom 90% of the people, it just shows how reliant our economy is on that, the continuation of this. And we could get deeper into this on a different.
We could. I mean, you know, the other aspect that's going to hit pretty soon is Walmart and Target and all of the people that depend on Chinese import. They're not going to absorb the tariff costs anymore. They've said that, and they're starting to not do that, which means those prices go up. And there are, you know, millions upon millions of Americans that depend on those places to be able to buy anything. That we've created that market so that they have no choice but to vote to shop there. But it's not going to do them any good at this point.
But You know, Trump already addressed this. He said, Tina doesn't need 30 dolls. She can get by with two.
Yeah.
So wait till Christmas comes around and the middle class says, I don't have money to drop on Christmas presents. I can't spend $1,000 on Christmas presents. I can spend a couple hundred.
Yeah. Well, and they're going to have to be creative and they're going to look for alternatives to cheap plastic crap. That's what they're going to do. You know, that's coming from China.
What is the alternative to cheap plastic crap?
God, you know, better locally made toys that, you know, if you're paying that much money, you might as well buy homemade stuff.
I think people are going to be baking cookies and giving those out as Christmas presents.
Yeah, that's, you know, what they do, or fruitcakes. Maybe you'll make
so it's peripherally related. Maybe we could dive in deeper at another time. But a couple really important institutions recently have had meetings and announcements about how overvalued the U.S. stock market appears.
Right. It's seven companies driving the gains. And that's basically based on AI, which, by the way, I personally hate AI. Call an 800 number and try to reach a human being. Some of these AI do not want to get you to human being because human beings cost money.
So, but Dave, you're saying that there's probably possibly a bubble?
Yes. That's right. The Bank of England, which is, you know, that's the sort of equivalent of the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States, basically of New York, almost a Freudian slip. But they issued a warning saying that this is a quote from their Financial Policy Committee. On a number of measures, equity market valuations appear stretched, particularly for technology companies focused on artificial intelligence. And like you said, the five biggest companies in the S&P 500 are 30% of the whole stock market. That's the highest it's been in 50 years. And so there's this tension, they say, you know, investors are starting to sell their shares that are held with big money managers because there, you know, there's about $3 trillion of private credit investments that, private equity investments that could soon face problems. And so there's like, we're talking an immense amount of money that's potentially running for the gates, running for the doors to find safety. So much so that the IMF managing director, Kristalina Georgieva, she said this market now looks like the dot-com bubble of 25 years ago. And her quote is, valuations are heading towards levels we saw during the bullishness about the internet 25 years ago. If a sharp correction happens, it will hurt overall global growth and make life, this is a quote, especially tough for developing countries. But really what that means is global recession. Hurting global growth means global recession, basically. And so they're saying that. Yeah.
Do you really want a robot in your house while you're sleeping? I don't trust them. Right. I saw Terminator 3, and I think they're trying to kill off the human race. That's just my opinion.
I mean, there's videos. There are videos. I mean, we're way out in the weeds here, but there are videos out there of, you know, different AI safety tests. Like there are institutions out there that they'll take a look at the top five. I think it's five big AI models out there, and they'll test them for like, will it play tricks on you? Will it work against your intentions? Will it try to harm you?
Yes.
And there's evidence now that the AIs will scheme in ways that are actually harmful to people. So there are warnings. There are lots of signs that people are saying we really need to regulate this. But of course, as we know, this administration has no intentions of that for lots of reasons. But the idea is that we're relying heavily on this and we're actually betting the farm on this being some stimulating growth in the future when in fact, it's not really clear if there's going to be tremendous economic gains or not from all
this. Just saying, not getting a robot in my house. Done.
I'm going to say also that AI is a long way off in legal research. I mean, I've used it as a starting point, but man, it does not, it is far.
It makes up cases, makes them up.
It misinterprets cases and sometimes gives me cases that aren't even on topic. It just looks still just looking for keywords in it. And it's not really analyzing the cases. I imagine they'll be able to do that soon to make it good. But right now, it's so far from taking over the world. I don't think it could do that. It's certainly not going to replace lawyers anytime soon. And this is self-teaching AI on Westlaw, which is one of the two big, along with Lexis, the two biggest research firms. I don't know anything about Lexis's AI, but Westlaw's is supposed to be learning, and I'm not seeing a lot of progress. I've been using it for about a year now, and it's just... And attorneys make mistakes and judges chew them out when they just start quoting from AI. and using the source, and the judge says, did you actually read the case? You know, I mean, I've seen that happen. And it's like, yeah, no, read the case. I mean, it might be good, you know. So I'm not thinking, it's great. I mean, I know that people are using it, write an essay in my style and stuff like that. But even then, it gives you a starting point. It's not, right. You know. So I think that that's going to be a bubble too, because I think it's going to be like other texts where it's really, the progress is really overrated. And yeah, I don't think there's going to be a Terminator. What was the
Terminator 3?
Yeah, but what was Skynet, it? Frame, something frame.
Skynet.
That was it. Yeah, that was it. It's not going to be like Ultron in the Avengers. It's a long ways from any of that.
We'll see. We need to pivot to our other third topic: the U.S. government shutdown.
Where there's no discussion.
Third week.
Yep. With no discussions going on. I did not predict that. I thought there would be discussions. But they're not talking.
Here's my prediction. When it hits November 1 and people start getting their new expected healthcare premiums for 2026, you're going to see a lot of people start lose their mind. Marjorie Taylor Greene, her son said, hey, mom, look what happened to me. That my premiums went from $800 to $1,600 per month. That's just for the basic premium without paying any deductibles, without paying any pharmaceuticals, just $1,600 a month. He goes, I can't afford $20,000 a year for basic health. That's just the policy coverage. What the hell's going on, mom? And she started asking around and nobody knew. Nobody in the Republican Party knew, what are we going to do about this?
I watch her talking and I'm like, wait a minute, this must be AI. I mean,
because you're agreeing with Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah. Because I'm agreeing with, but not only am I agreeing with it, it's actually sophisticated analysis.
Way beyond Jewish lasers. Instead of crazy. That was the other thing that got me. It's like, wow, she's like this all the time. If I was in Georgia, I might even vote for her.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but she is, you know, I mean, I'm amazed. And she has also broken ranks. She's one of the five or six Republicans that have broken ranks on Epstein.
With Tom Masti.
Yeah.
He's the guy who's a real thorn in Trump's side because he says, I just want the truth to come out.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
Listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
And so far, I just want to say, what is this government shutdown really all about? Can anyone tell me?
Dave?
Yeah, so that's where I was going to head. So a good call, Matthew. So far, Matthew, you had said, hey, we could look to November 1st as a potential like opening for
a harbinger.
And Eric, you'd said like, hey, there's been no compromise to this point.
No,
we haven't had a resolution.
No discussion, right? They're not even talking. At least publicly.
You've also pointed out that there have been some people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and a few others who have started to really see the writing on the wall here about the massive increase. So some members have recommended compromise on healthcare subsidies for now in order to reopen the government ahead of the 2026 elections to avoid a backlash. But others are saying, well, we could try to get the filibuster waived in the Senate just to force a majority vote. But they're holding the line on kind of nuking the filibuster. They're saying nuke the filibuster because of the long-term implications of what that might entail. So these are the types of discussions that are happening on the GOP side. On the Democratic side, they're saying they're going to stick with the decision to force a compromise on these healthcare subsidies. The calculation is that exactly as you said, November 1st rate increases will drastically affect significant numbers of U.S. households who are participating in these ACA exchanges. And rumors are circulating that once that happens, Democrats will be willing to end this holdout, since the maximum impact from what is effectively a political stunt will have been achieved. Also, they would then be seen as the reasonable leaders whose actions reopen the government.
Yeah,
before
but most
additional
of these ACA
harms
coverages are in red counties. By a much higher percentage, Republicans go to the ACA exchanges either because they don't have they work for a small company or maybe they're self-employed. So they can't, you know, it's not like I work for a large Fortune 500 where we already have subsidized healthcare.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, they don't necessarily attribute things the right way. I remember when the whole ACA discussion was happening, there were signs at some of the Republican protests saying, keep government out of my Medicare. So We'll see how they do it, but we've already seen that what is the county, Kern County, I think, has lost its hospital. And Oz.
That's going to start happening in red counties.
Right. Dr. Oz was, you know, thought, oh, great, I get to take out a California hospital, not realizing whose district it is. I mean, if Mahalfa had any chance of winning it, his response to that is, you know, going, he doesn't have a chance of beating Huffman once Prop 50 passes, but it's going to be even worse for him, except that it's not Kern County, it's Glenn County. And Glenn County is probably going to be in Thompson's district, but or pardon me, who's our state senator? McGuire's district. You know, so it's so anyway, we do need to put this into context, but it is going to hurt a lot of people everywhere. I mean, there are a lot of people that rely on it, and they're going to want that turned around. And I'm going to have a little bit of a prediction about this at the end of the show, because I actually think that Trump is one of the biggest political geniuses. He knows how to play the crowds. I think for the past few months, he's lost his touch. And yeah. I'm going to point out a couple of things they're doing. First of all, the Epstein thing. You know, that's he misplayed that. If he was going to do that, he shouldn't have played it up during the election, because he's created a monster for him. But also on these economic issues, we talked about food. You're going to talk about, we're talking about healthcare now. And I think he's making a big mistake not talking to the Democrats. I think he needs to at least be perceived as trying to, you know, but he's not even talking about it. He's talking about his accomplishments across oceans, right?
Right. You know, he ended 7 wars. Right. And if you asked MAGIC, name them, they couldn't name them. And by the way, the ceasefire that happened over in Gaza, that lasted a day or two before they started killing each other again.
Yeah, supposedly it's back in place, but it's a real tough one, because it's great. He's strong-armed Netanyahu, good for him. But it's going to take more than that for the long run.
Yeah, but having guys with the, what do they call themselves, the Muslims who put the wraps around their head, walking through the streets shooting fellow civilians, you don't hear that on college campuses.
Well, we haven't had that yet, but
I'll just say this. Yeah, so I love our rapid fire team handling these issues. We cover so many issues within a sentence or two that it's, you know, I can't really go back on everything, but I do want to circle back to the criticism from the left about the Democrats' position on the ACA subsidies, that they're kind of, you know, the establishment Democratic Party's decided this is where they're going to draw the line in the sand. But I heard this for the first time this week, and it's just, it's hard to wrap your head around when you hear it, when you say it out loud. The Democrats have decided to draw a line in the sand that if we go from the extraordinary COVID subsidies, additional COVID era emergency subsidies on top of the ACA pricing, that if we roll back from our current COVID emergency status to where we were before COVID, that would be an existential threat to the healthcare system. Well, guess what? What we're talking about doing is rolling it back to the Affordable Care Act as written. So it points out the flaws of this particular market-based solution that we have arrived at in our country. It's only, but it's only affecting 20-ish million people that are this gap of they're not privately insured, they're not publicly insured, and they're on the sidelines, and we want to encourage them to spend money out of pocket. And if you make close to above poverty and you don't qualify for Medicaid, make about $30,000, or you make up to about, you know, $90,000, you're going to get a sliding scale subsidy. And so those 20 million people who didn't have insurance in that small little, not to say small, but that bracket, those are the only people we're talking about. If we're talking about market pricing, that the subsidy, some of the subsidies are going to be rolled back, there are people that are going to see their insurance go up over $1,000 a month.
They can't afford it. The average middle class person cannot afford that.
Right.
Which means, like, therefore, this is an unaffordable ACA plan to try to get the uninsured insured.
I'm going to have to go uninsured, and I'm going to show up the ER when I have an emergency.
I mean,
in a car accident.
Right. No, it is. And even the insurance coverage itself, the deductibles are ridiculous. People can't afford those.
Right.
You know, it's they're going to supposedly double for the same thing if this is allowed to happen. But you're right. This was a flaw. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, here's a real world example, and then you can finish your thought. I apologize for interrupting. I know for sure California has an amazing silver level exchange option. You could buy into the Blue Cross Blue Shield and get like silver coverage. You know, there's bronze, silver, gold, right? Silver is what is recommended and incentivized. California, during this COVID emergency subsidy increase, California went one better and actually made silver even more desirable to try to get as many people as possible into this plan. The deductible was zero. It was a special plan with a zero deductible. That plan, I've seen two different reports on this, but we're talking about deductibles of $3,000 to $6,000.
Yeah. I do think actually California is, they're already doing things to pack it up. There's a strong move for single payer in California, and their compromise will be is that they'll probably duplicate the subsidies. And so if you're in California, you're probably going to be okay. Not great.
So let me just understand this, Dave. I've got to pay $20,000 a year just for my base insurance policy. Then I got to pay $6,000 out of pocket for my first medical expenses. Then I got to pay 20% of the coverage, whatever my bill is.
Correct.
What middle-class person can afford that?
Correct.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, they do cover your regular appointments and most of your drugs, but that's but yeah, it's
what if you have a special pharmaceutical that you require?
Right. If you need something special or some type of treatment, you get that deductible. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I know people that are only spending $300 to, you know, $400 on their monthly premium.
November 1.
That's right. You read my mind here. So it's currently, you know, $6,000 a year, but it's bound to go up by Kaiser Family Foundation said 75% will go up. So it won't quite double, but we'll see in a few days.
I want to get back to the government shutdown real quick.
Sure.
Do you guys like working without pay?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, if you're on Social Security, if we say, sorry, we're going to cut your Social Security check, we might get it to you in the future. Maybe not. We've already had Russell Vogt, who's head of budget now, say, one, where these people who have been laid off temporarily, we're going to furlough them permanently and just fire them. Two, we said, we're not giving them back pay. Sorry, you're out. And then three, people who are actually working and not getting paid, that's what's going to crack this whole system. When government employees that encounter citizens every day finally say, I'm done, I'm calling in sick. Why am I bothering showing up to work because I'm not getting paid? I could stay at home and not get paid.
Yeah, I mean, a lot. The shutdown is having impacts on all kinds of stuff. For instance, I've got an IRS, a case against the IRS right now. I'm half tempted to start filing motions like crazy because all but one of the attorneys on the other side are furloughed.
And there's nobody there.
Person on the case, they're not there. So this would be a perfect opportunity for me just to flood with motions right now. You know, I mean, it would come back on me later. I wouldn't do that because I don't want to build bad faith when I'm trying to settle a case. But I'm sure there are attorneys doing that right now who don't care about the long term as long as their own client's paying them, right?
And I'm going to come back to airline travel. When TSA is working and not getting paid, and air traffic controllers, those two people are going to change this whole narrative when they start calling in sick saying, I'm just not showing up to work. You don't want to pay me? Screw you. I'm not showing up. And then when air travel gets affected, all hell breaks loose.
Yep. And we're about to go into the Thanksgiving and holiday season where air traffic picks up. And so it's one of those things that you read my mind, by the way, by talking about air travel. But just big picture, California. So the federal government is the largest employer in the country by far. And California has the most federal workers. So it's really going to hit home here the hardest. Virginia's second.
In Virginia, right. And by the way, are ICE agents getting paid?
For the moment, I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, for the moment.
He made an exemption for the military, but do you want to go for ICE and harass brown and black people and not get paid?
Who knows? The guy that played Superman. We do have to put this to an end. We've reached our time. That brings us to predictions. Dave, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So I recently became aware that there were $5 billion in clean energy industry project grant cuts. About 90% of those projects were targeted in blue states. Out of those 200 or so, over 200 of those funded projects were canceled in blue states. This is affecting the commercial solar sector, key investments in grid stabilization, and it's impairing the distributed model that's really started to get built out to make everything a little bit more cost effective, a little bit more green, and a little bit more stable. Like we saw in Texas when their whole system went down. Texas is now the leading state for solar investments because of that. They know it works. This is going to have a direct impact. Why is this important? This is going to have a direct impact on price of energy, cost to companies and consumers as demand goes up, which could lead to blackouts and disruptions. And so solar projects, as I mentioned, it's like the leading way to lower long-term costs. And that's a $70 billion industry. The United States recently went from 14th in the world to 3rd in the world. But now we're seeing that Trump says that solar should compete on a level playing field, despite the fact that this is a political decision unrelated to technology, economics, or reason. There's been, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars that have been spent on fossil fuel subsidies in the past. What I'm saying is, they're actively handcuffing the growth of the green energy sector, which is huge globally. So my prediction is that in the upcoming election cycle, this is going to really be a key political issue as citizens are made aware of why these harmful and costly energy policies were implemented and how it impacts them.
Matt?
My prediction is November 1, when people go to their mailbox to get their new projected premiums for their healthcare in 2026, you're going to have a lot of people screaming loud. Because when it affects your pocketbook immediately, that you have to pay this, and where the hell am I going to get an extra $1,000 a month? People are going to scream at the congressman, what the hell are you guys doing about this?
All right, real quickly, I had already predicted that Mamdani was going to win the New York mayor's election race, but I want to actually be more specific in that. There's been enormous pressure on what Mayor Adams to drop out. He already did that. He's probably got a job waiting for him at the White House. We'll find out. But there's been massive pressure on Curtis Sliwa. Curtis Sliwa, and I'm not even sure if I'm saying his name right.
You are, Sliwa.
Sliwa, who started Guardian Angels. And I remember him being on TV.
Running the subways with the Red Berets.
1980s, they faked an incident on the trains. They apparently didn't see the John Ritter movie, you know, where he got caught doing it. But and he has been intense on a lot of issues of race and anti-Semitism over the years, but he's mellowed out. And I did not like him when he was young. His whole uniform reminded me of Hitler Youth, the whole thing. But he still wears the beret. And he is not bowing to that pressure. He is the consummate never Trumper, and he's actually moderated in some ways. I'm predicting that Mamdani is going to win in the second round once Sliwa's votes are taken out. But it's actually too late to take him off of the ballot. I think actually Adams is still on the ballot even. And so I think that Mamdani is going to win in the second round. But I see a long-term future for Sliwa once Trumpism collapses in the Republican Party, because he's going to be one of the people that Republicans who were like, where were you during this? He stood up to Trump and has done so. I think we're going to see him rise in the Republican Party once this thing is over, if it's ever over. We'll find out if any of that comes true. Until next time, stay informed and stay engaged.